Well, hello everyone, I'm here. Today we're going to be looking at the aftermath of the German election, which took place a couple of weeks back. Of course, the AfD increased their share of the votes, but have been kept out by the regime. A man called Friedrich Merz, true regime creature, is going to be the new chancellor. He is a NATO hawk, among other things. And here to tell us all about what's going on in Germany in an incredibly informative video, so do stick with him, is my good buddy Monothalmus, our German correspondent here. Just before we get going, I'll remind everyone, do pick up courses at the Academic Agency. Lots of great courses available, Trivium, Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now, but let's not waste any further time. Monothalmus, take it away.
On February 23rd, Germany held a snap election, and now that the dust is beginning to settle, we can review the results and try to take a quick look ahead. It was a profoundly weird election. Immediately after Trump's victory in November, the FDP ripped the band-aid off and left the disastrous traffic light coalition after months of budget disputes, and as a result, the snap election was called. Campaigning season was eerie, completely devoid of energy, as if everyone already knew what the result was going to be. The party seemed exhausted and uninspired, like the yesterday's men that they are. Outrage about the far right gave a minor spark in the last few weeks before the election, but that was about it. In the end, the results were pretty close to what everyone had expected, save for a few exceptions. On the surface level, the situation couldn't be any simpler. An election with the highest turnout since 1987 showed a strong rightward shift, and the two rightmost parties in parliament now command a large enough majority to govern comfortably. Of course, things aren't that simple, but before we get into the mess that are the upcoming coalition talks, let's look at how all the most important parties did. The FDP, pro-free market liberals, did not reach the 5% threshold and thereby crashed out of the parliament after taking a blowtorch to their voter base by being complicit with every insanity of the traffic light coalition. They had mostly been a one-man operation after a similar electoral punishment in 2013, but Christian Lindner, who resurrected the party back then, has announced his resignation. In the last decade, they frequently were a release valve for disaffected voters for whom the CDU under Merkel was too centrist, for voters who didn't like the Greens, and that did not dare to vote for the AfD. Given the lack of a strong successor for Lindner, there is now a legitimate chance for this party to disappear completely over the next few years. If that's the case, it'll be interesting to see who ends up filling that vacuum. The Sarah Wagenknecht Alliance, BSW, started with lofty expectations and actually had pretty good polling data last year. They too missed the 5% threshold by a mere 13,400 votes, and now seek to appeal the results of the election. Wagenknecht is an odd figure. She is half Iranian, grew up in the GDR, and was known as an Orthodox communist. For years now she has been a constant fixture in talk shows, where she regularly flanked the CDU from the right on social issues such as immigration. She was, and is, one of the most prominent voices in Germany for more cordial relations with Russia, and generally opposes NATO. Imagine, like, a German George Galloway. She was raging against the postmodern urban left from which she split off, but every notion of portraying her as based is counteracted by her open pandering for the minority vote in Germany. It's unclear whether her party has a future after this defeat and what she will do going forward. In any case, this failure is weakening the anti-NATO position in Germany, especially the left-wing variant of it. The Greens were punished the least for the traffic light coalition, a government in which they dominated most discussions. In this election, they ran on a comparatively centrist platform, trying to gain more support from suburban voters, older people, the middle class, and so on. Throughout this process, they've been hemorrhaging radicals, and they expelled some prominent figures of their party's youth organization. But all this fell flat for two reasons. Their policies hurt the people they wanted to reach too much to make significant gains there, and their candidate, Robert Habeck, had a fall from grace in recent years, and is now probably one of the most hated and ridiculed politicians in Germany. He has announced that he will take a step back from the front row of politics, and the Greens stand at a crossroads. Their attempts to overtake the Social Democrats and actually compete for first place have failed miserably, despite polling way north of 20% in the height of the Greta and Fridays for Future mania of 2019. They have hit a ceiling with their current voter base, have leadership questions going forward, ditched key values, and now have a horrendous track record after being in government for the first time in 16 years. They do seem to be a bit out of ideas and haven't done much since the election, outside of moaning that the new parliament will have a slightly lower percentage of women and minorities. After originally starting out as a peace movement, they too have now become as hawkish as it gets on foreign policy. With almost 9% of the vote, the left, Die Linke, had a surprising resurgence after being dead in the water for much of last year. They did well among young voters, largely by absorbing the more radical elements that abandoned the Greens and the Social Democrats, and the party now functions as a bit of a reservation for the woke zealots, or SJWs, as we used to call them when I was young. They also did well among naturalized foreigners, and rode the wave of chimping about the threat of the far right with great effect. They leaned heavily into campaigning on social media, and were relatively successful doing so. One of the key aspects of their success was a focus on domestic and economic issues, putting their past opposition to NATO on the back burner. It will be interesting to see how much of a role that will play going forward. In any case, they will not play a role in any coalition talks. The biggest individual winner was of course the AfD, doubling their share of the vote, gaining 5.5 million new voters, and reaching almost 40% in some states in eastern Germany. Among the population at large, the last few years have seen a considerable normalization of the AfD, and the parties that wanted to ban them do not have enough seats in the new parliament, so that's basically off the table now. On the flip side, there has been a strategy by party leadership to sideline the more radical elements in the party. It remains to be seen if that's just a facade for electoral purposes. For what it's worth, several prominent radical figures have now been elected into parliament, but the strong showing has undoubtedly strengthened the more moderate Alice Weidel's positions as the face of the party. The AfD too, are you sensing a pattern here, has kept the anti-NATO and pro-Russian sentiments to a minimum, and have instead received support from the Trump administration and Elon Musk, who held a Twitter space with Weidel. Already on election night, the AfD offered themselves to the CDU as a coalition partner, but the interest was not mutual. Normalization has progressed, but not far enough for something like that. But if Weidel wants to become the German Giorgia Meloni or Marine Le Pen, she seems to be right on track. The center-right CDU, of course, came in first and will lead the next government, come hell or high water. They put on a more right-wing face during electoral season, featuring words like order and stability on their election posters, spoke against the Greens much more so than in the past, promised to be tougher on immigration, to turn the economy around, and so on and so on. It doesn't sound like much, but it was a clear break from the Merkel years. A coalition with the AfD being a political impossibility for the time being, and minority governments being uncommon here in Germany, they are left with essentially just one option, a coalition with the Social Democrats. As a clear election winner, the pressure was on the CDU to make this happen, and any failure in this regard would have been seen as their responsibility. As a response to this, CDU leader and presumptive chancellor Friedrich Merz essentially love-bombed the Social Democrats in the first 48 hours after the election, appealing to their shared responsibility for institutional stability. He cited common ground on fighting deindustrialization, the conflict in Ukraine, and so on. This was accompanied by novelty, though. Shortly after the election, the MPs of the CDU brought forth a parliamentary inquiry to the cabinet in the form of a catalogue of no fewer than 551 questions. These inquiries are part of the checks and balances, and the executive has to answer these questions. The novelty is that these questions are about the government funding and the political neutrality of leftist NGOs, thereby threatening to derail the gravy train. This kind of safe, edgy stuff is clearly inspired by Doge and is a veiled threat to the Social Democrats. If you don't play ball in the upcoming coalition talks and were forced to do a minority government, we will cut funding for your client groups. It is also noteworthy that the CDU has been remarkably united and organized in their messaging lately, successfully putting the pressure on the Social Democrats. Merz has expressed the desire to form a new coalition government by Easter, which is by no means impossible, but that would be considerably faster than the last three governments. So now, all eyes are on the Social Democrats, who, yet again, had a poor showing. That's 4 out of 5 of the last general elections ending in bitter defeat for them, with the 2021 election being the fluke exception. Many in the party blame the three coalitions they formed with the CDU under Merkel for this development, and now there is enormous public pressure to enter such a coalition again, and like a battered housewife, they likely will do just that. These last few years have shaken the party. In the post-Merkel era, they had hoped to have a resurgence, and they did come in first in the 2021 election, forming a left-wing coalition. But the result was a dismal failure on all levels, and their track record couldn't be any worse. Scholz is now a lame duck chancellor for another month or so, and party leadership is digging in, steadfastly refusing to resign. The only major exception is Rolf Mützenich, chairman of the parliamentary faction, who opposed more aid to Ukraine and tougher course against Russia to the bitter end. Pistorius is now expected to be the coming man. He is hawkish on the whole Russia-Ukraine thing and had a meltdown when he spoke shortly after J.D. Vance at the Munich conference. Objectively speaking, the Social Democrats are ripe to be taken over and bent to somebody's will, but there is no one in sight to pull that off. Pistorius certainly isn't that guy. Simply put, the Social Democrats are out of ideas and out of qualified personnel. Now they are expected to go under the yoke again for no other reason than Puttler, Orange Man Bad and Mill AfD. And at this point, that is what's going to happen, unless the party finds the strength to walk away from the coalition talks, for which they'd most likely receive a hail of harsh criticism from the media. There is some talk, for what it's worth, about a number of their MPs being adamant that they'll never vote for Merz in parliament, which could derail the coalition, given the slim majority that the two parties would have. Mind you, two parties that used to receive a combined 90% of the vote back in the day. This is the state of play currently. Friedrich Merz is about to head a fairly milquetoast coalition government, where he probably hopes to set the agenda on most important issues. What can we expect from a government under Merz? If you were to lead a minority government, we could of course expect more red meat, like defunding NGOs, and he'd probably be more inclined to cut welfare spending, but at the end of the day, he is a regime man and will not represent disruptive change in any event. Shortly after the election, Merz made a statement about not intending to close the border, leading to the slop merchants having an absolute field day. Like this, for example. 10-second clip, 23,000 likes, even Uncle Jared fell for it. The reality is a bit more complicated and requires some context. After several terror attacks in December and January, Merz broke the taboo of voting with the AfD in parliament, which led to nationwide demonstrations by leftists. Together they passed a non-binding resolution proposal, but a few days later, passing an actual law with AfD votes failed, partially due to an intervention by Merkel in the meantime. Both the resolution and the proposed law were based on a 5-point plan. These 5 points involve some pretty basic stuff, like more border controls, making deportations easier, and categorically refusing entry to everyone that shows up at the border without proper documents. Now, whether or not you call this closing the border is mostly about semantics. If people from the CDU try to rile up their voters, they might call it that. If they try to get the Social Democrats to agree with it, they won't. Currently, they want to form a coalition with them, so these measures will not be called closing the border. The debate and the outrage are mostly a nothing burger, especially since these 5 points are partially based on proposals that various members of the Social Democrats in local and regional government have made themselves. But the Scholz government didn't pick up the proposals due to the Greens and their hardline pro-immigration stance in the traffic light coalition. Merz still intends to write this 5-point plan into law and has called this a red line for him in the coalition talks. All things considered, it's pretty likely that this will be passed at some point this year. Merz has explicitly stated that fixing the issue of immigration is key to contain and maybe revert the rise of the AfD. This isn't new for him, by the way. As far back as the 2002 general election, i.e., in the halcyon days when we were basically an ethno-state, a somewhat young Friedrich Merz suggested that the CDU should campaign against immigration, which was shot down, however, by then-party leader, a somewhat young Angela Merkel. Now, an important piece of context that many people aren't aware of is that the EU agreed to a new pact on immigration in November of 2024, after years of negotiations. This pact is supposed to be applied from the summer of 2026 onwards, and Merz's 5-point plan is just supposed to bridge the gap between now and next year's summer. We don't know yet how this EU pact will look like in practice and how well it will work, but it appears to be part of a soft pivot by regime institutions to a more anti-immigration stance, maybe akin to the stance of countries like Denmark and Sweden, which has been called pantsuit remigration. The other thing is that the debate about controlling the German border is not really striking at the heart of the issue. By far the biggest group that came to Germany in the last 3 years are Ukrainian women and children, and there's a realistic chance that many of them will return voluntarily after the war, just as the refugees from Yugoslavia did that came to Germany in the 90s. The next biggest group is people from other EU countries, such as Poland, Romania and Bulgaria. Fair enough, the numbers are still far too high, but not only is there absolutely zero legal remedy for migration of EU citizens, it's also not exactly the rising tide of color. As of the last few years, we don't primarily have an influx problem, it's a deportation problem, because we haven't found a way to send back the people that came in 2015 and so on. It remains to be seen if the new government will get anything done in that regard, but there can be cautious optimism that things are moving in the right direction, even if it's for containment purposes. The other big issue is, of course, Ukraine. In this regard, we need to remember that Merz is a hardline Atlanticist and strongly pro-NATO, so much so that after his political comeback in 2018, he was arguing for maintaining a close working relationship with the first Trump administration, and he did oppose the Nord Stream pipelines. But what does a pro-NATO Atlanticist do when the US government seems to be at odds with NATO? Merz called NATO not a military alliance, but a political alliance, committed to values such as open societies, his words, free markets and liberty. He too joined the choir of indignation following J.D. Vance's speech in Munich, the meeting between Trump and Zelensky, and some anti-NATO statements by Donald Trump. Merz has named several key points since the election. For supporting Ukraine, he views the countries of Europe standing united and being on the same page as crucial. He has also gone out of his way to emphasize how closely aligned he is on this with Macron, whom he has already met since election night. Another point is an increase in military spending in Germany and growing the size of the German army. He cited the example of Sweden, whose prime minister he also met as an example, who brought back the draft a few years ago. After permanently suspending the draft under Merkel in 2011, Germany might do something similar, since our army has shrunk from about 500,000 in the 80s to about 180,000 these days. Now, such a military ramp-up is at the same time presented as a response to Trump, and exactly what Trump wants us to do. Given the support for this by all parties, it's virtually guaranteed that some of this is going to happen, but it's unclear how any of that is really going to affect Ukraine. Who even knows what the situation is going to be in a few weeks when Merz actually takes office? And European unity in that regard is a non-starter. Several countries such as Hungary, Italy, Poland and others will not ever, follow the lead of Brussels over what the US says, with Orban already shooting down any meaningful results of the EU summit on March 6th. Would our government or Merz pull the plug on the aid to Ukraine? No. Will the continued aid for Ukraine matter? No. And frankly, once the war in Ukraine winds down, whenever that might be, what actual points of contention are there between Germany and Russia? Our industry is going to request reviving the gas trade with Russia, and we have enough domestic issues to worry about. In fact, it is quite possible that concerns about NATO and Ukraine to some degree is just a pretext used by the CDU to bully the Social Democrats into a coalition. Kissinger once called post-war Germany a country without foreign policy, and my money is on that being confirmed once again. So what is Germany probably going to do about Ukraine other than spending money?
So what happened?
Fucking nothing.
Yeah, why?
Lee, nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
In closing, what did this election mean? What will Merz bring? The election greatly weakened the anti-NATO position in Germany. The political class is closing its ranks, the left is exhausted and broken, the center-right is in the driver's seat now, and the AfD may or may not be fully contained going forward. The new government is shaping up to be a bit less insane and incompetent than the last one. They probably will be better administrators and do less to actively harm the population at large. Dare we say they might fix some potholes? At least the energy prices might go down a bit. And that'll all be spiced up by some safe, edgy, anti-woke posturing. Overall, though, more continuity than change, but in the general pivot that Europe and America seem to be leaning towards, Germany appears to be less of a laggard than before. Thanks to AA for having me, and thanks everyone for listening.
If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends,
get out.